free space. This is a place where I can share my thoughts, okay? This is a safe space.
I actually think that the instrumental of this entire cast recording is gorgeous from top to bottom.
I can be wrong. I know, shocking.
That's what I mean. This is a very unpopular opinion.
Like, what a take. I can't believe we're saying that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking all about Hadestown. Now, I feel like we're about to fight on this episode, and I probably...
You're spoiling it. Let's go.
Well, I probably would have fought you more last Friday night if we hadn't seen what we saw on Saturday night, which we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But it kind of, like, altered my opinion. But I also feel like because...
In comparison?
Yes. But I also feel like this might be a situation where I need to give, like, a double rating based on... Right. The first time I saw it versus, like, this time that I saw it.
Well, I think maybe we'll get into it today, but there are two separate things. When we're rating a show, we kind of rate it as one thing, but there are kind of two things that are happening. There's a production, and then there's the show as it stands on its own. And those are sometimes two different things. And I think sometimes when you can see how good a production really is, how good a show itself is when it survives multiple production, multiple cast changes, all these different things, that's when you can truly see kind of the core of what's there.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that might be a theme of the episode today.
Yeah. So we just saw Hadestown last week, the Toronto touring production of Hadestown that Mirvish brought at the Royal Alex Theatre. It is still on until August 20th. There are rush tickets for Hadestown available. They are $59. And you can also buy, it's in-person only, right? 32 partial view tickets for $39. So there are a couple options for this. It's also like... decently readily available on Mirvish's, like, if you're looking to book in advance.
Yeah.
I did look this morning just to see, because I knew we were recording, and at, like, noon, all rush tickets were already sold out. So, depends on the day.
Not to interrupt, but I rushed on Friday when we went to see it, and basically what I had to do, I had to be on right at 9 o'clock, and I clicked my tickets and went into my cart right away, and by 5 minutes later, they were mostly gone. But... there were a bunch available at 9, so it is doable.
But at, like, 9:02 when I checked, there was the orchestra seats were gone. Yeah. So
my seats were great, like, dead center back orchestra. No complaints. Yeah. That's where I'd pick usually.
Yeah. Also kind of strange that we're recording today because there's been a lot of, like, Hadestown news today in general. As of 5 hours ago on the Hadestown Twitter, it says, with tonight's 1,141st performance, Hadestown has officially become the 100th longest running show on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
So that's today, July 18th. And then also today on July 18th, we have some casting information. Last episode, we talked about Eva Nobozada leaving Hadestown. And today we found out that Philip Boykin is coming in on September 5th as Hades. We both saw him in Once on This Island as, is that character's name Tauntaun? I think it is.
Yeah, Tauntaun Julian.
It's, what's her name? Her dad. What is her name?
T-Moon's dad.
He has a wonderful voice, so it will be nice to hear him sing those songs. And then
a different physicality for the role.
Different physicality for sure. And then super random, but Betty Who is stepping in to play Persephone. I don't really have a comment on this because I don't really listen to any Betty Who, but...
As
random?
A Lost Culturistas fan, who Betty Who has been a guest on the show.
She also just performed at, what's his name, from Pentatonix's wedding.
Right.
Yes.
This is fun. Sure. This is a fun...
Another kind of, like, different personality for this, I would say. We've kind of had, like, the same, like, Amber Gray kind of types step in to play Persephone ever since she left. And this is a completely left field choice. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
So that happened today. Okay, let's get into Hadestown. We will start this episode by saying, and, like, I don't know if Char is going to listen to this episode, but maybe I'll time code spoilers for you specifically. So keep an ear out for that. But we will be talking about spoilers in this episode because there are a lot of set things that we're going to talk about, and that itself is a spoiler. So if you have not seen this...
And things that are different from Broadway tour.
Yes. So if you have not seen this production yet and you're planning to see this production, maybe go listen to another episode and then come back to this. And if you have seen this production, then I also would like to know your thoughts on the Broadway versus Toronto / tour, all of that. Another thing about Hadestown is that it is going to the West End in 2024. Tickets are on sale now. So this is like making its debut overseas. It's been on for a pretty long time, and we'll get into it a little bit later, but like it's been in development for years. So It's been like a long process. Okay, let's start off. I guess the best way to talk about this is, what is Hadestown about? And can you give us a brief synopsis of the Orpheus Eurydice?
Okay, actually, I was just looking this up. I was on Wikipedia because I thought this was important. So basically, Hadestown is a retelling of the ancient legend of Orpheus and Eurydice. It's a Greek myth. It is about Orpheus, who is the son of Apollo, he's the son of a muse in the show, who writes music. He is gifted musically, and he falls in love with a woman, Eurydice. And in the myth, they get married, and there is a prediction that their marriage is not meant to last. And a short time after this prophecy, Eurydice dies unexpectedly, and she is taken to Hades. Mm-hmm. So Orpheus is distraught by this, and he descends to Hades to follow his wife. And because Orpheus is protected by the gods, he is able to find her and get there. And normally, Hades would turn someone away, but because Orpheus is so talented musically, Hades is moved by the song that Orpheus plays about Eurydice. So Hades says, you can take her back, but there's a catch, a twist, a trial, a test. You have to walk by yourself straight ahead, and you have to trust that she's following behind you. You cannot look back at her. And
is that for like the rest of their lives?
Nope, just until he gets to the top. Not forever, but until he gets to the top. Until he gets back to the living world. And so he has to trust that she's there behind him. And but then right before.
How do you know that you've gotten back to the living? Or I guess you just know.
It's like an exit. There's like an exit sign, I assume. Right. And in this legend, right before he gets back to the living world, just a few feet away from the exit, he loses his faith and he turns around and he sees Eurydice behind her, trapping her eternally in Hades.
In hell.
And that's that.
That was pretty good. I feel like you read a brief summary and took the key notes.
I did some key notes. I got some summary. I got the story. And so this is a retelling of that story through music, through the style of kind of New Orleans big band jazz.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you two questions here. Okay. First question, when you heard that Hadestown existed and that it was a modern retelling of this Greek myth, What were your original thoughts?
Okay, so I wasn't super familiar with the Greek myth, so I just kind of looked it up at that time, I guess. And I guess I didn't really have that many opinions on it, but I really, just based on everything about it, I really thought I would enjoy it. However, when I did listen to the cast albums available, there's a concept album, there's a live recording available, and now there's obviously the original Broadway cast recording, it did not grab me, and so I kind of never went back to it very often. Yeah. And then whenever we went to New York, there were always other priorities. I never made it a priority to see it when I was in New York because it did not thrill me before seeing it. And then so finally when it was here in Toronto, I was like, I cannot miss this. I have to talk about it on the podcast. Let's go. I went with my mom, actually. I texted her that morning. I was like, hey, are you free tonight? You have 20 minutes to answer me. And she said yes. And she said, ever since hearing this on your podcast, I've been really wanting to see this. So
which leads me to my second question.
Okay.
What did you think of Hadestown?
I didn't like it.
I think that's a nice way of saying you didn't like it.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Sorry.
No, I mean, like, over the years, I think, like, post-Tonys, again, like, just with it being, like, in the mainstream media for, like, X number of years, I feel like you kind of decided that, like, as you said, this show, like, wasn't for you. And turns out
it wasn't
for you. But I didn't think that you would dislike it as much as you did.
Yeah, I was... So I went into it thinking I wasn't going to like it, which is maybe, which is on me. That is my fault. I should be more open. But for some reason, I still thought my mind would be changed. Like, I really thought I was going to go into a magical experience. And right. I unfortunately did not. And we could talk about maybe if it was a different production, I could have been, you know,
swayed
in that way. But with this specific production, that was not going to do it for me.
Right. Is it the story? Is it the music? Is it all of the above?
I think I've pinpointed three things.
Give it to
me. I find a lot of the music really unmemorable.
Sorry, they're singing the same songs the entire show. How is that unmemorable?
Like, there are a few really standout songs that are great, and we'll talk about those, but I find a significant amount of the music and the melodies unmemorable.
Also, it is like 99% sung through.
Yeah.
So that's also something to keep in mind. No, I know, but that's also something to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, like, for sure.
You're not going in this to have a break and not like focus. Like, you got to pay attention because they're not speaking.
It's scored completely through, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, point two.
The point two is, and this some people could say is a feature and not a bug, but it didn't work for me. I found the characterization of all the characters really thin. And you could say, and I understand it, it's because they're characters from a myth. They are meant to be, they're not meant to be real people. They are meant to be people that we project ourselves onto. But in this 2.5 hour musical, I did not find the emotional connection really there. I did not find the characterization there. I did not like latch onto any of the characters there. And then the third thing, this is hard to explain. And this is actually going to be like the shallowest one, but I really hated the costumes.
Oh, I was not expecting that.
I really hated the costumes. I hated them so bad.
Except for the leather overalls, which we love.
No, the leather overalls are really good. The leather overalls are really good. But I really hated the workers' costume. In the first half, the leather overalls are good. I really hated the workers' costume in the first half. Whenever the band came forward, I was like, what are they wearing? I did not like Persephone's dress. I really didn't like it.
The green?
The green. Orpheus is just wearing, like, whatever. I can't really
care about. Reeve Carney's daily attire is what Orpheus is wearing.
The men look fine to me. But I really, the outfits, and the fates also look fine. I really could not get past the outfits. This is so shallow, but I really hated them.
I really thought you were going to say the cast, but maybe we'll get into that a little
later. That's kind of like, to me, that's like a separate thing, if that makes sense. Like, those things that I just talked about are like the show itself. If we're going to get into it, I did not care for this cast.
Yeah, I do think, though, that the cast has something to do with your second point of like chemistry and just like emotional connection with these characters, because I can say that watching Reeve Carney and Ibel Novosada do this part on Broadway, I'm getting the emotional relationship, which I felt like I was not getting with J. Antonio Rodriguez and Hannah Whitley in Toronto. Now, I don't know if that's like a tour direction oversight or we're alone in that, because the reviews out of this are really good.
Yeah.
But I think this is something that goes with what you were saying to me of like, if you don't know what exists on Broadway, then there's nothing to compare it to. And in your eyes, this is like, this is the only production because it's the only one that I'm seeing. Whereas like this, I think, and not always, because we've seen some really good tours, but I do think that this is the case of, like, it's not as good, and it's, like, really not as good as Broadway, which is, like, sad and unfortunate, and I don't know if, like, a different cast would change that. I don't know. There's something that didn't work. I did not hate this as much as you hated this, mm-hmm. but I also loved it when I saw it on Broadway. Right. But I also saw the original cast. So I feel like there was a lot going for that production. It was very, very hyped up at the time that I saw it. It was right after the Tony Awards that year. They were nominated for 14 Tonys. They won 8 Tony Awards. So it's not like people don't like this material.
No, absolutely.
People like this material. It's like critically acclaimed, whatever. But moving it into a Mervish space, which I think like they thought everyone would run to it, which it seems like people are.
They have.
I don't know why it's not working for us. Sometimes, I also thought Act Two was like way worse than Act One, which is surprising.
Well, yes. Well, that comes back to a production issue. This is actually a third. Maybe this is my actual third thing besides the costumes. This is too long. It's way too long.
It's so long. And also, we've made this claim a million times, and I don't know what we can do about it, but the Royal Alex needs to fix their sound system.
So this is interesting. I did not find that, but I had seats almost dead center, like 2 or 3 rows ahead of the sound booth. So right. It was mixed for me optimally, whereas your seats are on the side.
On the side, forward. Like closer to the stage, yeah.
Yeah.
But you also said that this is a show that might need a closer view so that you can like, 100%. Be in it.
Yes, yeah. I think this is a show that would benefit greatly from a really intimate production.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like there's only a few videos of I think it's New York Theatre Workshop.
Yeah.
Production.
It was like 2016 or 2017 is when yes. that happened.
And I'm like, ooh, I think I would like this a lot more.
Have you seen any of the videos from Citadel? Because it's similar.
Just very few, very few.
Yeah.
But this is kind of. I mean, when you bring things to Broadway, obviously the house is plus 500. How many seats did the Walter Kerr have?
Ooh, I don't know. Let's look. Walter
I'm just curious.
Kerr.
The Royal Kerr. Alex in Toronto is the smallest of the big houses.
But
of the
Mervish houses.
But it is, I believe, like 1,200 seats-ish.
So the Walter Kerr is 975.
Okay, that's actually fairly small.
The Royal Alex capacity is 1244, so yeah. It's significantly bigger than the Walter Kerr, but to me, I don't know, the way that the Royal Alex is like put is mapped out in there, it feels small even though it's not, but I guess yeah. That's probably like the orchestra, because when you get up to the balcony is so steep up there. Oh my god, it's
yeah.
so steep.
I don't know the last time I sat up there.
I sat up there for like Dear Evan Hansen, like the last time I saw it. It was it's so high
really?
Up there. Whereas like the Walter Kerr orchestra is a little more like spaced out. Royal Alex is pretty like tight together seats wise. And the stage is like, that's to me, the biggest issue here is the actual stage size. And I understand, I mean, are we going to get into stage mechanics here? I don't know if this is the time, but like, should I get
yeah,
into
let's
it
go.
Here?
Let's do it.
This is a show that like the set to me, at least when I saw it on Broadway, the set feels like a character because so much is happening on that set. And here, I understand that you need to make adjustments for tour spaces. Obviously, you're traveling this stuff in like trucks when you cross the border.
You,
and
you do something
everything.
That's adaptable for any theater. You don't know what you have in the theater you get to, so all you can do is what you bring with you.
Yeah. But for that, things have to suffer. And on Broadway, it's like a double turntable with like an elevator lift kind of thing. And here it's a single turntable with no elevator lift. They did do the like stage growing when we go down to hell, but not nearly as many times as yeah. it was done on Broadway. It just felt bigger. It just felt grander. And I think that that obviously like helps you tell your story
sure.
of a show where you're in between hell and regular land,
the living world.
Yeah.
Yes. So to be honest, I had seen a few like videos and clips and stuff. I personally did not miss anything until the climactic moment at the end.
Let's save that.
Yes.
When we like, we'll go through it. But I agree the way that they do the hell
entrance
transitions.
And exit,
yeah. It's basically like. It looks like an industrial, like, garage door that kind of opens, like,
it's like an elevator
claw.
Door.
Yeah.
It's like an elevator
And you first, I thought the very first entrance when the workers came in on that was really good, when they were wearing the leather overalls coming out of that door was really good. I thought
when,
like,
when Hades entrance, came out the first Hades time entrance, from there, right? That was fantastic.
Yeah. But agree, we really suffered at the end, which we'll get to a little later in this episode, with that no stage trick. So yeah, that's that. Do we want to talk about, like, where do we want to go here? Music?
Let's talk about songs. Let's talk about songs here. So, not to be a hater. I'm not a hater. There are songs
you are
I like.
A hater.
I am a hater. Sorry, this is my opinion. And I come here. This is a free space. This is a place where I can share my thoughts. Okay? This is a safe space.
not today. No, I'm kidding.
Not today. No. So there are some songs that I really, really like. One that I love When the Chips Are Down. What you gonna do when the chips are down? Now that the chips are down. What you gonna do when the chips are down? Now that the chips are down. Oh my aching heart. What you gonna do when the chips are down? Now that the chips are down. I love
I
when
think
the
Fates in
the
general
fates.
You love.
I love the Fates. I think, like, I wish they used the Fates more. I wish we had more of the Fates. So you were saying you don't think they're really playing the instruments.
I don't.
I thought they were.
I only say this because I was watching, like, the other violin player, and then one of the Fates doesn't play an instrument.
She's got, like, a castanet moment or something.
Sometimes she's just, like, moving her arms and
she's
clapping.
Got, like,
other times she's got, like bells on a string. Yeah. So then, and then one of the Fates has a violin and one of them has an accordion. And I was watching the violin player because there's a moment in the show when it's, like, kind of dark and they're just, like, using, it's like a, I don't even know how to describe it, but they're kind of just, like, scraping the bow of the violin on the violin to get, like, a really, like, minory crunchy sound, and then at the same time, like, they're playing the accordion. So I was watching the actual violin player who was doing the exact same thing, and I was like, oh, okay, they might be doing it together. But then I realized that the music director was playing the accordion. I was like, oh yeah,
maybe
I don't think she's doing it. But unknown. Yeah. I don't know.
Because that was
my
favorite
part.
Have
to be listed in the program as,
that's a,
like,
great question. As, like, part of the band,
if they were, yeah, that's.
But is Orpheus? Because I think he's really playing guitar.
I agree, he's really playing guitar,
especially at the end.
I mean, we are not going to get into it, but it is giving Roger from Rent.
So the next day we saw Rent and Stratford, and I came home and I was telling my mom the story of Rent. I was like, have you seen this before? I don't know, blah, blah, blah. She's like, he's trying to write one great song. And she's like in Hadestown? And I'm like, literally, yes. I was thinking about, why are artists always writing about creating art, if that makes sense? Like,
well, also, it's about, like, it's the same thing. Like, he's writing about creating art, but he's also, like, trying to get the girl, right? Like, the Roger to Orpheus pipeline is very similar. We're getting
the thing
a,
is, it's an Orpheus to Roger pipeline, because Orpheus, as a character,
yes.
has been around for thousands of years.
But, like, the opening chords of, like, One Song Glory, I would say, are, like, reminiscent of the la-la-las from Hadestown. And then also,
the motif.
Roger's, like, I'm writing one great song is very similar to, like, King of Shadows.
King of Shadows. Oh, my God. Well, I can't even talk about that. It's going to get me angry. Going to piss me off.
But, yes, back to the Fates. You love When the Chips Are Down. And
I love When the Chips Are Down.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm opening up my list of songs. I love work songs. Chant.
Keep your head low.
Chant, yes.
Great. I love chant also. Singing low. Keep your head low. Oh, you gotta keep your head low. If you wanna keep your head low. Oh, you gotta keep your head low.
I think, and then obviously, to me, the two most famous songs from the show are Wait For Me. I'm coming to wait for me. I hear the walls repeating, the falling of my feet, and it sounds like drumming. And I'm not alone. I hear the rocks and stones. I'm coming. Why We Build the Wall. And I think those are both very good as well.
Hello, work is never done. My children. And the war is never won. The enemy is poverty. And the wall keeps out the enemy. And we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
We build the wall to keep us free.
Yes, you said... After we saw that Hadestown really picked up after they sang Wait For Me, and I was like, that's the second last song before we go to intermission, but like really great that you felt that way.
Yeah. When the Chips Are Down is a little bit before that, and there's a chant before that, but a lot of other stuff bores me.
Whereas I live for the duets, the ballads. I love All I've Ever Known.
I'm asleep. I'm falling asleep.
I know you're someone I have always known, and I don't even know you now. I wanna hold you close. I don't wanna ever have to let you go. Suddenly the sunlight, bright and warm. Suddenly I'm holding the world in my arms.
I love. I didn't love it this time, but when I saw it on Broadway, I do love Living It Up on Top. Amber Gray, like, really gives on that cast recording.
It felt quite, like, thin to me the other night. Just the whole everything.
Yeah, I think it might have been who was singing it, but I don't know for sure. Also, you were very distracted by the one ensemble member, so I think that didn't help the situation either.
We'll get to it. My other issues.
But yeah, I'm just looking at the cast recording. I mean, I do love the beginning of the show. I love the opening, Road to Hell, when we get that, like, amazing... Not even the lyrics. I love the... trombone.
Yeah, that's good. The trombone player is actually the star.
The
trombone player is the star of the show.
The star of the show is the drummer that was backstage.
He comes up with like a little drum. Well, that's interesting because on Broadway he's on stage, but on off-Broadway or on tour he's off stage.
Yeah, like you backstage. Also probably don't care for Any Way the Wind Blows. Honestly, no. Like anytime like Eva gets to just like sing a ballad, I'm here for that. I don't even like Way Down Hadestown. I think it's kind of bad. I agree. The epics, or sorry, chant is really good. Keep Your Head Low.
Not the epics. I would never stand for an epic.
King of Shadows. Sorry.
Never stand for that.
I'm trying to think what else here. I don't know. The second act kind of drags.
So this
song wise,
this is another thing.
Oh,
right?
Sorry. Before we get to that, my favorite song in the second act is Doubt Comes In, hands down. The Fates singing Doubt Comes In.
Yeah.
Doubt comes in, the wind is changing. Doubt comes in, how cold it's blowing. Doubt comes in, I meet a stranger. Walking on a road alone. Where is she?
I agree. That's when, right after that is when they're doing like the crazy instrument stuff. I agree. That's really good. That's good.
And also like that is the moment. That is the main moment.
That is the moment.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's pretty good. What I'll say is, so at the end of Act One, right? Mm-hmm. Eurydice is in hell. Orpheus also in hell. And I'm like, So what else is there to do? All we do got to go is come back out.
Yeah.
So to me, that should take 10 minutes. Why are we doing another hour of this?
Because we have to sing Epic 3 5
times. The pacing of this is wrong. The pacing is off.
All right. Rachel Chavkin, we need to talk.
No, I'm serious. I even when I was saying, like, I remember someone asking, maybe it was Shard, basically, like, why don't you want to see it? And I was like, I really feel like I'm going to get bored in the middle. Mm-hmm. Because.
And you did.
And I did. Because there's nothing to happen. There's nothing happening.
They, I'm trying to find
they drag
here.
Out this story.
So, it was the 2019 Tony Awards. They won Best Musical. They were nominated for Best Book of a Musical, lost. They won Best Score.
Who won Best Book? Who won? I'm curious. Tootsie?
Who won Best Book of a Musical? Oh my God, was it Tootsie? No.
What was it?
2019. Let me scroll down. It was Tootsie.
Okay, well, I can't even defend that. That's so bad. Oh my God.
Oh no, 2019. What were
what
you doing?
Who else was nominated? Let's see if there's anything better.
Who else was nominated? Ain't Too Proud, Beetlejuice, Hadestown, The Prom?
I don't really
That's
know.
That's a mistake.
This is all bad, kind of.
Honestly, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice? Sure.
And for the good like time.
Adaptation. I'm wondering if... This is a totally separate thing, but I'm wondering if the Tony should have something like original versus adapted, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the Oscars, yeah.
But honestly, they're all kind of adapted at this point. So what was original of that list?
Yeah, none of them. Tootsie was a... Well, a The movie. Prom, maybe.
It was based on like a newspaper article, but...
Oh, true, yeah.
Like a true story, but maybe that could be the original one. I don't know exactly what the rules are. But yeah, it's hard.
Eva lost for lead actress. Reeve was not nominated, which was controversial at the time. Mm-hmm. Andre DeShields won featured actor in a musical. Patrick Page was also nominated. Amber Gray lost featured actress. And then it won scenic design, which I do think that is deserved. The industrial set is really beautiful. I mean, the lights in Wait For Me are so iconic to that show.
Yes.
I remember you were saying that, like, you were afraid that they weren't going to go up high enough to swing.
Well, okay, so this is because I wasn't super familiar with the staging, but when the workers came out, they were holding them.
Yeah.
And I thought, because it was tour, you don't always get everything that Broadway gets, that was going to be the thing that they were going
to
manually swing them, that they weren't going to get to do it. But then I saw the wires coming down from the ceiling. I was like, okay, we're going to get it. We're going to get it.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why I think being closer would be good for a moment like that, to get those lights really close to you,
well,
as opposed to me far back.
Yeah, like, I could also see from where I was sitting, because obviously the band is on stage. They took out, like, the pit is covered for this show because normally they would be in the pit. So they added a couple, like, extra rows, it looked like, in the audience. Or if not, it's just that first row starts, like, a little bit behind the pit.
Like,
I was watching... Those lights were swinging
far.
Over their heads. They were literally in the audience over their heads. The other thing, though, that if you are sitting in the first couple rows, like, beware of all of the smoke that comes out into the
crowd. A lot of dry ice.
There's a lot of dry ice. Especially once we get into hell, there's a lot of dry ice.
A lot of dry ice.
But then, yeah, then they were nominated for costume. Oh, wow, Steph. Nominated for costume.
I have strong feelings about the costumes.
And then they won lighting, they won sound design, they won direction, and
they won for choreography. I hate the choreography.
Orchestrations. I know. Let's talk about the choreography. Why do you hate it so much?
I just felt it was super basic and unoriginal.
Even during like chant, you didn't like that?
No, I like that. Chant was great. Chant was peak for me.
That's also when the turntable is introduced. So
yes,
that's
exactly.
Fun.
The
turntable
in hell only.
So
there are like a couple things. I felt that the ensemble altogether was not grounded and grungy enough. And this is where it comes in with costumes and where it comes in with choreography and where it comes in with the beautiful, very tall blonde lady who's in the ensemble who sticks out like a sore thumb. And I'm sure she's very talented, but she should not be in the show because she looks so out of place.
Yeah.
I want
beautiful
everyone in the
singing voice.
Beautiful.
When she started, when she sang like a portion of a random song, was like, "Oh, girl, you must be an Eurydice like understudy or
and
fate." She might be a fate understudy.
I think she's
or both.
I think she's both.
Yeah,
really stunning, beautiful, so talented, but she sticks out so much in this show. She does not have the look of the show.
Also, now my turn to be a little shallow, but like, this is a lot of people's like tour debuts, and it kind of shows. So. I don't know. That's all I'm going to say about that. But yeah, she really did stick out and not in a good way.
Yes. Especially with this worker ensemble, they kind of... I mean, they used to have the tall man. They used to have Timothy Hughes in the ensemble in the original Broadway cast. But the way that they're kind of supposed to become this, like, faceless, personalityless group, that they've lost their souls by being in hell for so long, and then they kind of get them back at the end. I kind of wanted them just to kind of be a little more homogenous. And yeah, I want them to be using their knees more. Get that plie. Get that plie in. I think actually 5 is a great number for them, because it's a small cast. 5 is a good number for the workers. And then when you add Eurydice, it becomes 6, which is an even number. So it, like, completes it. I think that was good.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I found the choreography just, like, really simple and, like, unoriginal to me. Yeah. And just kind of awkward looking. And I wanted it to be a little, like, rougher, because this is, if it's being inspired by New Orleans, by Louisiana, by, you know, almost like speakeasies and like the underground world, not necessarily hell, but, you know, underground establishments, that's what I'm reading as it, like, yeah. I just want it to feel a little dirtier.
Yeah,
and it's not as dirty as I want to. And this is when I was talking about my costumes. What I just despise so much, the outfits that the workers are in before they are in the overalls.
Like the jeans.
The skinny, like, khaki pants. Okay, and this is, I have a theory. I was developing this. I've been ruminating on this theory. A lot of times, especially when shows have, like, costumes have more modern outfits in them, you can kind of tell when the original production was staged because of the style of clothing that they're wearing. And they're all wearing skinny things. They're all, like, even Eurydice has tights and boots. The workers have these tight pants.
They're all wearing, like, Doc Martens, basically.
Yes. And I'm like, oh, this, when was that New York City Theater Workshop production? Like, 2016?
2016, yeah.
That was the look. That was the look in 2016.
In the program here, they have, like, the, under Rachel Chavkin's name, they have, like, all of the production notes. So it says, the world premiere was at New York Theatre Workshop May 2016. Then it received its Canadian premiere at the Citadel November 2017. UK National Theatre. Oh, I forgot it was there first.
Yeah. Like a small theatre.
Right. 2018, Broadway 2019. And then I think it's been touring since 2020. I think it, like, started early 2020, like pre-pandemic.
Oh, really?
I think pre-pandemic? It was pre-pandemic.
Was it pre-pandemic? Okay, interesting.
I think it might have been. And then so, it's obviously had its 100th show on Broadway, and as I said, it's going to the West End next year. So, like, there's no signs of this slowing down.
Yeah, and this is my unpopular opinion. Like, I can be wrong. I know, shocking.
No. You don't have to be wrong. There's no right or wrong in this.
You're so right. Yeah. You're so right. There's no incorrect or correct. But obviously, this speaks to so many people, and, like, I think it's wonderful. But yeah, so that first major production was in 2016, and I can tell based on the skinny jeans everyone is wearing. Like, update these outfits. It felt awkward because it was so tight. You know what I mean? They're doing these movements. Why are they in such tight clothes? They should be in looser clothing. They should be a little more modern. I just don't think it quite works. Even when the band, like, the trombonist, loved her. She was amazing. She came out in this fedora, and I was like, get that fedora off.
Was that a personal choice? Was she wearing a costume? Because at first I thought it might have been a personal choice.
She was also in a skinny pant. I know.
And a combat boot.
I was like, get them
out. But then you have the complete, like, flip side of that, which with, like, Hades and Hermes.
They have good outfits.
Yeah, but Hades also looks like he's out of, like, a Beetlejuice cartoon.
A mob film. Yes. I know. Is he giving Mob Boss this, like, pinstripe zoot suit moment?
He's giving, like, have you ever seen, like, the animated Batman with, like, the Joker wearing a top hat and, like, a pinstripe suit? That's what he's giving.
I cannot say I have.
Mob Boss.
Mob Boss. Yeah, he's giving Mob Boss.
And he's Hermes is wearing, like,
a
metallic suit with, I do appreciate the, like, wings on
I noticed,
the
like, halfway
cuffs.
Through the wings on the cuffs. I think that's cute. I think that's sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think those are the strongest two costumes, the men's suiting. But I did hate when he came out in the sunglasses. I really thought that was super cheesy. Super corny. I didn't like that.
It's actually, like,
it's giving, I just got LASIK.
Not even that. It's giving, like, the Green Goblin and Spider-Man turn off the dark, which it was twice in a row. Patrick Page giving the same character twice.
Why is he always giving a villain? It's that deep voice.
It is the
that
deep
resonant
voice.
Tone.
Also, like, shout out to Matthew Patrick Quinn, because that baritone.
He was my favorite.
But yeah, and then Orpheus is wearing like almost like a waiter-esque outfit with like...
Yeah, because he works at the bar?
It's like a Henley that's a three-quarter sleeve with like a red bandana and then very unflattering brown pants.
Yeah. Something else, please. Something else.
Although...
And he doesn't change the whole show.
No, he doesn't. And I think I had Everyone said changes. This to you after I saw it on Broadway, but when I saw it on Broadway, I swear Reeve Carney left the stage door wearing that exact same outfit.
He took off the costume and put on his own. Like,
maybe
he just walks around.
A suspender, but, like, he was wearing the bandana. That is part of his daily look.
He does wear the bandana all the time. Who told him that was a look? Who told him that?
He's been wearing it since 2017 at the Citadel.
Like, who told him that? He put on the costume and he's like,
it works for him.
This is me. This is my second skin.
And as we said last week, that man will, like, die in this show. He's not going anywhere.
He loves staying in a show. He loves to stay in a show.
He loves singing. La, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
Okay, let's talk about Epic 3. Why? 1, 2, and 3. Tell us about the epics. Tell us your thoughts on the epic.
I really don't have anything to say except that I found it really unpleasant to listen to. Mm-hmm. And that's that. Mm-hmm. And that is also separate from the performances we saw. The song was boring. It didn't give me anything inspiring. This is the moment. I do think it is better than One Song Glory. Or not One Song Glory. I do think it is better than Your Eyes, though.
Everything is better than Your Eyes.
It's better than Your Eyes. But...
Although, did I cry during Your Eyes the other day?
Yeah. Because we were on the journey. This show didn't take me on the journey.
I know we said we're not going to talk about it, but there are many parallels to Rent.
Yeah.
And honestly, Hadestown's biggest downfall of it being in Toronto right now is that Rent is 1 hour and 45 minutes away, and it is fantastic. Like, yes. It is so freaking good. So, like, that is the biggest downfall right now to Hadestown, because the stories are kind of similar. I do want to talk about the fact that when I saw it on Broadway, I saw Hadestown Matinee and I saw Moulin Rouge Night, and they're kind of the same storyline.
Well, Moulin Rouge is also based on the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, obviously, with various changes, but...
I do think that Moulin Rouge's storytelling of this tragedy is a little better. That also might be an unpopular opinion.
They're so different, but I do think that the characters and motivations are slightly better developed in Moulin Rouge, which is actually such a hot take, because...
That's what I mean. This is a very unpopular opinion.
Like, what a take. I can't believe we're saying that. Because they are a little bit also not good, but... that show has energy all the way through in a way that Hadestown I didn't feel had energy all the way through. And
yeah,
obviously that's for many reasons, including the fact that it's popular music that you're familiar with. It's a little more tongue-in-cheek. It's trying to be funny, like it's leaning into comedy in Moulin Rouge, whereas I felt Hadestown took itself really seriously to its detriment sometimes. I think it takes itself so seriously.
Really seriously, but then also at the same time, it's like incredibly over the top.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, like, the way, and I've always thought this, and again, I did love it when I saw it on Broadway, but I've always thought that, like, the characterization of Orpheus is so annoying. Like, the way that he speaks is so annoying. And it does feel, I don't, like, it's definitely not supposed to be, like, parody campy, but if you deliver that line in a specific way, you are teetering on the line of camp.
I turned to my mom, I'm like, I think this is really corny, this show.
And also, you really did not like how over-the-top Hermes characterization
is. Yes, Tara was telling me that...
Shout out to Nathan Lee Graham, who I love in Zoolander.
Wonderful.
If anyone's seen Zoolander, he is Will Ferrell's right-hand man.
His
name is Todd.
His voice is beautiful. But I found... the kind of stylistic choices he was making as Hermes hard to understand. Like, he's giving so much backstory and exposition.
He's narrating.
Yes. And the tone of everything he was saying, I'm like, I have no idea what words are coming out of your mouth. Everything was so stylized and pulled in different directions with his words. Yeah. I'm like, you're doing too much. There's
his
a way
best
to
stuff
do
was
a
when
lot.
He stripped it back and was more serious. That was his best stuff.
Yes, like right before, like...
Wait for me.
Wait for me reprise, where he's like... Or even, I don't even know, when he's like explaining things when it's getting a bit more serious. 100% agree. But during like Road to Hell, when it's like, on the road to hell, I was like, I can't. Was that a good impression?
I don't even know.
That kind of was.
It's the enunciation. It's like yelly. Yeah, mm-hmm. He really was like performing.
He was very open. His vocal cords were open.
Andre DeShields definitely did a similar take, but he's also like 70 something, so it didn't come across
he's being held
as
back
much
by
energy.
Yeah. I watched a few clips of Andre DeShields and I preferred his performance to it.
It's a little classier.
Yeah, just a little more like he's throwing it away a little bit more. He's a little more like you're listening to me, like he's drawing you in, as opposed to, you know, Nathan Lee Graham being like, look at me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just slightly subtler. Though I can imagine, like, the lines are exactly the same and there are jokes for them to tell. So, like, I can imagine him being a little bit over the top, but I just think he, like, drives me more restrained, but I didn't see him. I like the performance that Chris Sullivan gives on that live cast recording as well.
When we found out that it was Toby from This Is Us. We were recording like a video in the back of my car as like a singing video. I don't even know if I released that. I don't even know if I still have that clip.
No, I think that
clip, I released the like it's I Toby.
Think, I think that clip is.
I gotta find it.
I think that clip made it to the edit.
If not, there's a moment of us like saying, "Oh my god, it's Toby from This Is Us," and then literally not even missing a beat and going straight into Wait For Me.
It's crazy. Yeah, I do want to like give them a good note here, and I think this is just Hadestown in general, but they have really been a champion for diverse casting for this show, because why wouldn't you, first of all, but also this is a storyline that we're talking about, like Greek gods that no one knows what they look like, who they are, if they were even human to begin with, so like why not cast the best person for the best part, even if that's not the case for this tour company.
Well, no, I agree. I think a lot of times tours, we've said this before, end up looking like generic brand versions or like store brand versions of the Broadway house. They kind of take what they did on Broadway or in the most major production, and then they're like, you kind of look and sound like that person. Now just
it's like
it like
no
that
name
person.
Versus
yes,
like...
no name, exactly. Versus like Heinz, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a little bit like Funhouse mirror, like blurry face. But I don't think Hadestown has done that. In their casting, I don't think they've tried to mimic what they've captured on the Broadway stage. And even with recasting, sometimes yes. But like we're saying, like Philip Boykin as Hades, he looks different from everyone who's played Hades before. Lily S. White as Hermes right now, like a woman. We're gender bending it. We're just finding someone with... She's probably giving a performance a little more similar to Nathan Lee Graham. Love
Maybe
her.
Even bigger.
Maybe even bigger. But I think I would forgive her. on the road to hell.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true. Just look at like the leading characters of this tour cast. They look absolutely nothing like Reeve Carney and Evil Nevil Zadda.
And I think that's good.
Not even at all. Yeah.
I wish they sounded a little more like them, but
yeah, I don't know. It's also like a couple of my coworkers had seen this, and one of them had said, which agree, she's like, it's a lot of falsetto in this show. And it's like, yes, it's a lot of falsetto in this show.
On the, live New York Theater Workshop, it's not so much falsetto.
I think it's just the way that Damon Downo sings.
It is, but he's not going high. He's just kind of chest voicing the whole thing.
I also feel like they might have done a little bit of reorchestrating for Reeve specifically, because this does sit like perfectly in his range. We did listen to the Broadway cast recording on the way home, and you and your mom did prefer Reeve's.
He's
epic.
Got the voice of an angel. He's got the voice of an angel. Like, there's nothing else to say about
that. To quote Anna, I'm pretty sure she said, well, if he sounded like this, maybe I would have liked it.
The voice of
and
an angel.
Maybe she would have. Can we talk about the end?
Yes. Now, spoiler alerts for the specific staging of the tour.
Yeah.
And the Broadway show.
And the Broadway show, yes. So, as you said, the like concept of this is that the final scene here is that Orpheus and Eurydice are able to leave hell as long as Orpheus walks the road alone and does not look behind him to see that she's following. I don't think I knew very much when I saw it on Broadway. I don't really remember exactly mm-hmm. how much I knew, how much I didn't know. But I definitely didn't know how this story ended because we did not learn Greek mythology in school. We barely learned Shakespeare in school. Like, we didn't learn very much of this stuff. So this was all, like, a brand new story. I feel like I knew the very, very basics of, like, he writes this music to, like, basically bring back springtime. Hades mm-hmm. lives in hell with Persephone and yada, yada, yada. So on Broadway, we have the turntables going, which we have the turntables going on tour too.
So on Broadway, there's kind of three turntables, right? One going one, another one, and then the circle in the middle.
Yes, which is very similar to Hamilton, if anyone has seen Hamilton.
Hamilton's just got the two, but yes, on Hadestown, the center one also spins.
And very similar to Anne Juliet, which I think the Anne Juliet one, the center spins. We know that the center one spins and lifts.
Yeah, it lifts, but it doesn't go down.
It doesn't go down. So,
and what was I going to say? On tour, there's only one. There's not a second one on tour.
Yes, and it might be like a half circle. It seems like it's pretty small.
So
because the other part of the stage is pretty far forward, yeah.
I think before they're in hell, part of it is covered by the thing. Oh, and then it opens up, the whole thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's exposed, but you don't need it because you don't start turning until you're in hell.
The first time you turn is, I'm pretty sure it's like when the chips are down and Hades is like moving in the full circle around. Yeah. And then obviously when Orpheus sings, "Wait for me," and all that. So on Broadway, anytime you go into hell, anytime Eurydice goes into hell, she physically descends into the stage.
It's like an elevator.
When I saw that for the first time, I'm like, I've never seen a stage trick like this be so effective in a show. This was like post-Hamilton, but like we're still like figuring out what we can do with turntables. And I think that this was a really smart like scenic design route to be like, oh, well, they got to go down somewhere. So let's physically have the actors go down. Great. So when they're on this like journey back to the living, the Fates are singing, Doubt comes in, Orpheus is walking, Eurydice is walking, the Fates are here with their, like, lanterns. The stage is, like, pitch black on Broadway, which I, like, loved, because no matter where you're sitting, there's, like, a very small spotlight on Orpheus, and then obviously when the Fates come in with their lanterns, it lights up the stage more, but you have absolutely no idea where Eurydice is the entire time. Mm-hmm. So as far as we know, like, she's already gone. Like, you Orpheus. Don't know where she is.
You don't know if she's there or not.
So I just remember like sitting in that audience feeling so nervous because I did not know how this ended.
Wow.
And I felt so like tense in my seat to be like, oh my God, is he going to turn around? Like, is she going to die? Like, what's going to happen here? Whereas I feel like here, one, you're trying to decipher what Nathan Lee Graham is saying to him in the first place to know what the actual, like, journey is, which is not great because that's a really important plot point. Two, it's not dark enough on stage. We are dark at the beginning, which I really appreciated. Also, the music is, like, really tense at this point. So it's, like, this building
is good.
Up.
This is good music. This is good music.
I actually think that the instrumental of this entire cast recording is gorgeous. Yes, from top to bottom. I would listen to it without the lyrics. Like, that's how much I enjoy the instrumental of this. But yeah, not dark enough. And then when the Fates come out, I could see her. I don't know if you could see her from where you were sitting, but because I was close, I could see her
sometimes
walking.
Yes, sometimes no.
I could also see her leave because she has to get to like certain points on the stage to hit.
Right.
So when the Fates come in, I saw her like run away, which is like me being very nitpicky, but also I have a comparison, so yeah. I can be nitpicky.
As someone who's seen the show and who also knows the story, you know what to look for, whereas someone who's experiencing it for the first time, you know, they don't necessarily. Even me, let's say, who has never seen it before, but I do know what's about to come.
Yeah.
I am watching for different things than someone who is experiencing it for the first time.
Right. And then the other thing, so I had mentioned that the stage grows when they go down to hell. It kind of like breaks apart, opens up, which I think is like stunning. There's lights to show that. It's much, much bigger on Broadway. So when you're getting closer to the living, you really see it shrink back down. So you're like, oh my God, they're really close. He's going to make it. I can't believe he's going to make it, which I didn't get
I didn't notice that. Oh my goodness. I didn't notice that.
I think it happens here, but it's not as, like, drastic. So, sure. Literally, like...
It's not as big. If you, the stage isn't as big.
It's not as big. But, like, imagine not knowing anything, seeing all this stuff happen around you. You're hearing this music. I'm, like, so, so nervous for all of this. So then you see, which is the same thing, of, like, he walks up the stairs because the, like, workers are back in their living clothes. So we're about to, like, yeah, re-enter this universe. And then he obviously turns around. On Broadway, you don't really know where she is at this point. It's still kind of dark. You do see, like, glimpses of the living world come to life, but it's not quick enough that the lights go up and he turns around. So as soon as he turns around on Broadway, lights go up, she jumps into the circle and she descends down to hell. Mm-hmm. The gasps that were in the theater. I burst into tears when that happened. I had never had like such an emotional experience mm-hmm. like that in a theater before. And here I felt nothing, like not even an ounce of anything. And it was so funny because mm-hmm. I was talking to, one of my coworkers that saw this production, and I was asking her specifically, this was like a week before that we saw it, and I was asking mm-hmm. her specifically about that moment. And then I described to her the Broadway, and she's like, oh my God, I just got chills as you said that. I didn't feel mm-hmm. that way in the theater. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, like, when I've read, like, people's reactions on Twitter, someone also yelled out, like, no, when it happened on Broadway. Yeah. So, like, there are, like, audible reactions that I think we are missing out from here. And I don't know that, like, there's a way to fix it, because what happens here is, as we said, there's kind of like a garage door elevator, and mm-hmm. you see her like jump into the elevator.
Yeah, you watch her
and then he turns position. Around.
You watch her get into position.
And I don't know what else they could do, but not that.
That's the thing. I don't know what else either, because I'm sure they talked about a million different things. And just a trapdoor of that magnitude is not possible on a tour. It's just not, unless you had the stage really high, but it's just not possible. So,
but I had also never seen, I'd also never seen an elevator lift, because like it slowly descends, and then when you realize that, like, oh, she's never coming back from this, she like immediately like drops down into the
I wonder if she yeah. I wonder if that's just her crouching, you know what I mean, the elevator going the same spot, and she just kind of
I've seen a bootleg of a mezzanine like overview, and it does move a little bit faster, but she also she's also like crouch herself down. Yeah
You're just kind of you're limited by...
Totally. And I understand that with a touring production. But if this is your, like, biggest moment, biggest mm-hmm. plot point of the show, I need it to be better than what it was.
I'd almost wonder if we could go for something a little more abstract. Like, have her be pulled away by something. Or have her... I don't know... a little more like manual something instead of the like literal elevator piece. Something just a little more. Sometimes I wish the whole show was a little more abstract, a little less literal. I don't know, like the staging.
This is better than what I thought. I remember we had talked about this like when Hadestown was first announced. I'm like, I swear if she just walks off the stage, like this is not gonna be good. So it definitely was like better than what it was. And then essentially like we repeat the story over and over and over and over and over again. Orpheus makes the same mistake every single time. We do the same thing. Like, and I feel like because you watch her on Broadway like disappear, literally she's gone from the show, and then you see her like re-enter for the retelling of the story, which happens here. It's just that much more like impactful, emotional. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I feel like you had said the other day that watching those like small clips from the New York Theater Workshop, like you would prefer a more stripped down, mm-hmm. less in your face production. So I don't know.
I don't know exactly how it would work or what they would do for that moment, or if it would just become like a lighting moment or something. But yeah, I don't know if what they did quite worked, but I don't quite see another solution with the show that they have. So we're kind of stuck.
The answer is only go to theaters that are rigged for elevator lifts.
No, that's not the answer. The answer is because we want to be bringing theater everywhere. We want to, and like, obviously sometimes limitations add to things, like add to a show. Sometimes the more limitations you have, the more creative you get to be. But I think because they settled on maybe this perfect way to show this moment, and now you're trying to like make it something else, it just feels like less than. And maybe for someone who'd never seen it before or wouldn't know, this would be the perfect way.
Fine. Yeah. I really think because I have this like vivid comparison in my mind, it's just like a disappointing. But I would love to know how they did it. New York Theater Workshop, Citadel, the first production in London.
In these like, really small
spaces. First production of London, they did have the drop because I've seen that bootleg.
But I don't think they would have had it at Citadel, and I don't think they would have had it at New York Theater Workshop.
I imagine they'll have it in the West End because that just feels more.
Yeah, I think they will.
For like bigger sit downs, they'll have it. Anything else you wanna get off your chest about this show?
I'll talk about something that I like.
Okay, great.
I do think, I mean, obviously, theater is the way that this story has been told for thousands of years, and I do think there's something super beautiful about, you know, this is a myth that they say, you know, Orpheus is doomed to make the same mistake over and over and over again, and Hermes is doomed to tell the story over and over and over again. That's kind of his punishment, and every year Persephone...
We're going to sing it again.
We're going to sing it again and again and again. And I think there's something magical about the fact that you go into a theater and you watch this story and they're like, we're going to do it again. And then they really do it again the next night. You know what I mean? And that's like magical of theater, and similar with every show, but they really work in... This is a theater specific thing. Like, to me, a movie of this would not work because what works about it is that tomorrow night we'll be here and we'll be telling the same sad story again. And I think like it's the perfect venue for that.
Tomorrow they'll actually be doing it twice.
Tomorrow they'll be doing it in the afternoon and in the evening, you know, and they'll do it again and again. They'll do it again and again and again. And that part of it really moves me for some reason.
Wow. So that the end of the show the is end really what
where they're like, and we're going to do it again. And I'm like, and they are going to do it again.
Should we rate it?
Okay. Wow.
I'm going to give two ratings.
You're going to give two ratings. Okay.
Based on my first experience and my second experience.
Your second experience. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go first. My rating would be 6 out of 10 red carnations.
That's like high for you. I feel like you gave Joseph like 5.
I can't remember what I gave Joseph, but Joseph actually does suck, but I did have a better time. So there's that.
Great. Okay, my Broadway rating for this would be 8.5 out of 10 because I had a very like high emotional experience at it. I would say 8.5 out of 10 red Reeve Carney bandanas. And then I would say my Toronto rating would be 7 out of 10. What did you rate yours?
Red carnations.
Oh, I was gonna say that, but I'm not gonna say that. Hermes Little Wings.
Seven out of ten.
Yeah. I would recommend this. I think you and your mom would say the rush price is the correct price for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, it's on stage at the Royal Ox till August 20th. And
is it going on tour? Is the tour continuing after, or are we the final stop? We're a lot of times question. The final stop, but
we're the final stop for Hamilton right now.
Yeah, that's why they could extend.
Are we? Yeah.
That's why they could extend two times.
Hadestown tour, North American tour site. Let's see. Not subscribe. Tour. No, they're going to Ottawa next.
Oh, Ottawa.
They're going to Ottawa, and then San Francisco, and then Sacramento, and then San Jose, and then Los Angeles, and then Seattle, and then Vancouver, and then Edmonton, and then Calgary, and then Boise, and then
so the tour has a lot of places to go.
Did it just start? Did it just pick back up?
Wow.
They're not done until Charlotte, North Carolina, May 7th to May 12th, 2024.
Wow.
There will be many casting overhauls in for that sure. time.
For sure. They performed on James Corden like last year, I think, and it was a completely different cast. So national tours have a lot of turnover usually.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's our thoughts on Hadestown. And now it's time for our obsession of the week.
My obsession of the week, this is kind of a re-obsession, but it's a different version of a song that I've been obsessed with before. So recently, where was it? Where was this production of Chess, Tara? Tell me where this production of Chess was.
Wait, the most recent one?
Yeah, where was this most recent one? Was it
the Muni?
Was it the Muni? Was it the Muni? It was the Muni. So Jessica Vosk was in this production of Chess, and she shared a video of herself. But you know what she put over it? She put over it her version from her album, Wild and Free, of her singing Nobody's Side. And then I was like, let's go listen to that. And she sounds amazing. It is just, she always sounds amazing, but truly just a masterclass version of the song.
Never take a stranger's advice. Never let a friend fool you twice. Nobody's on nobody's side. Never be the first to believe. Never be the last to deceive. Nobody's on nobody's side. Never be the
The way I texted you last week being like, do we need to go to the Muni?
It's just so far.
It's so far, but apparently this production of Chess was like the best version of Chess that has ever had. John Riddle as the American? Who was the other guy? It was also was it Jared Spector?
That sounds right, but no clue.
I think Jared Spector was actually the American and John Riddle was the Russian. Because Jessica Vosk, I think, was John Riddle's, like, wife, and Taylor Lautner was Jared Spector's, which is kind of random casting, but, like, whatever.
Love it. Love that for them.
But the staging and the screens and everything looked really well done.
Truly, maybe the first time I realized it was about chess, to be honest.
Because they were actually playing chess.
It never occurred to me before what it was about. Honestly, just her voice at all times, but specifically singing Nobody's Side. Never take a stranger's advice. Never let a friend fool you twice. She doesn't do that. That's the Julia Murney version.
No, she doesn't. Yeah.
but she sounds amazing. It's just so crisp. She's so crisp.
It's good. It's a great song. Yeah.
So yeah, Jessica Vosk on her album Wild and Free singing Nobody's
I don't think
Side.
I've ever... What else is on that album? Does she have any Wicked stuff on there?
Let's look. Let's open
Maybe
up.
Not. Maybe it's too early because Wicked was...
Jessica Vosk.
Decently recent.
Wild and Free came out in 2018.
Oh, so maybe.
It opens with A Million Dreams. We've
like
got
Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman, I believe. I'm not listening. What Baking Can Do was on it. Wow, I should listen to this album. Chandelier by Sia.
Okay.
Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. Wow, one of my favorite songs ever. Nothing Compares to You.
Wow.
It All Fades Away is the closer. Well, no Wicked.
You just picked Nobody Said because you knew it, but maybe you should have been listening to the whole album. Maybe this will appear again in a different session.
Which I'm assuming is the Beatles song / Being Alive.
Wow.
Jessica Vosk's album Wild and Free. Listen, stream
the
it.
The whole thing. The whole thing.
Stream it. We can listen to that later.
There's so many people that have done these like individual concept albums that I love. They're just
great stuff. I find the covers of them horrible. They're always the worst headshot. Look at this cover. It's so bad.
Yeah, that's not what I expected.
What is
Casey Leafy also has a bad cover.
They're so bad.
Yeah.
The covers are horrible. So talk to me. Let me help you. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Why are you being like,
great question.
Pondering. Why are you pondering? Who designed this? What graphic designer designed this?
I don't know.
Graphic design is my passion. Okay, go on. Tara, what is your obsession this week?
Okay, my obsession this week, I actually can't believe we haven't talked about it because it's been a year and I feel like we probably should have talked about it like last February, but it kind of feels timely because today was the announcement that Here We Are, the final Sondheim musical, tickets went on sale for The Shed. It's off-Broadway, right? The Shed is off-Broadway?
Yeah.
In the fall. Oh, that's something we could potentially add to the list. It's a good cast, everybody.
I just think it's
going
to be hard to get a good ticket.
The tickets went on sale today, so who actually knows? But the reason I'm bringing that up is because if we all remember the 2022 Grammys, the In Memorial was a Sondheim tribute. And I can't believe we haven't talked about this on the podcast because that was one of the best tribute performances maybe ever. I mean, obviously, like, meant more to us as people that actually knew all of those songs than your everyday Grammy watcher. But it featured Ben Platt, Rachel Zegler, Cynthia Erivo, and Leslie Odom Jr. And I just remember, like, watching it on my couch
and Rachel walking up in that red dress, and I'm like, this girl has never looked more beautiful ever. And then when she started singing There's a Place for Us, I started crying because I was like, this is so beautiful. And then when the four of them do that like beautiful four-part harmony, Cynthia Erivo is singing like Send in the Clowns in the background. It's just a really, really well-mastered like medley of Sondheim songs. And I wish they would have like recorded it and released it, because I would download it instead of watching the In Memoriam again on YouTube.
So I'd be like, oh, remember when they died? Remember them?
Don't you love for
somewhere?
My fault, I fear
for us.
I thought that you'd want what I want
and quiet and all.
Yeah, it like came up on a suggested on YouTube, and I love when YouTube suggests things for me that I've already watched like 10 times. It's like, you know what? I will watch that one more time.
Click.
Yeah. So it kind of like recently came up for me, and I was like, oh, I don't think we've ever talked about this, and we should have, because it was such an amazing tribute. So like the entire thing, but really when Rachel comes in to start singing There's a Place for Us is when it was like, damn, this girl's voice. It was also like, that must have been right after West Side Story was released.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been.
Yeah.
And I think... So... So it was... of those, was she the only one who'd worked with Sondheim? Am I making that up?
I don't know, but that sounds kind of right. I don't think
I can't
Ben
recall,
ever...
like, Ben or Cynthia or, like, Leslie Adam Jr. doing...
No.
Sondheim shows.
And I also remember at the time, like... Not that Ben Platt is much older than Rachel, but I just remember like watching it and being like, look at this girl singing with these people. Like,
a star is
that's
born.
Cynthia. That's Cynthia Erivo up there.
No, for sure.
That's Aaron Burr himself up there. Like, it just felt like, oh man, this like teenager is singing with these like masterclass singers, and she's blowing them all out of the water.
That year for her was really like a star making year, and now she's got other stuff coming up.
She's got. The most upcoming is the Hunger Games prequel.
Yes, that's the soonest,
which I feel
one.
Like I will see in theaters.
I am into it. I think I should try and read the book, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Should I try and read the book?
I think is she like singing in this movie too? I think she does have like a song or two.
I think she's like an artist, like a singer in the book, in the show, in the movie. I think she is.
And then I don't even know when it's going to be released, because obviously with the strike going on and reshoots, but like Snow White has been on the radar for a very long time.
Yeah.
And she'll definitely be singing in that. So
I did receive word today. I saw on social media. This is irrelevant, but relevant, that Bridgerton season 3 is completely wrapped and edited and everything.
We really have to always just bring it back.
Well, because the strike makes a difference, but it's fully
wrapped. Yeah, but you know
it's
going to be devastating to you when they can't do press.
Oh, I actually will cry, because that does give me life when they do press.
Also, something that's thrilling to us currently is the Ariana Grande, Jonathan Bailey romance rumors that's happening on the internet right now, because people are learning for the very first time that Jonathan Bailey is not straight. And I feel like we learned this information when season 2 of Bridgerton came out.
We learn it
like,
anew every year, Every year
every
it's
time,
a revelation.
Every time he's with a woman somewhere, we're questioning his sexuality.
Someone's just like, maybe he's just a nice man. I think that's it. My favorite tweet I think I sent it to you was, Ariana's already got another white boy on roster. And then they're like, and so does he.
But he is looking great right now. He's giving his Fiero Ticular minus the like
frosted
weird
tips.
Highlight that he had.
Chop that off. Chop it off.
No, maybe he's got a frosted picture on the tips. Internet.
My guess, maybe he has frosted tips when they're at like shiz, and then in like act 2 moments, he doesn't have the frosted tips to make him look younger.
But the pictures that we saw of him would have been like, thank goodness time.
Yeah, so I actually don't know.
Debunked. But my favorite picture on the internet right now is Ariana in the middle of Andrew Garfield and Jonathan Bailey, because that is
That's
my
actually
dream.
The true obsession.
That is the true obsession of the week. Also, the tweets of like, she's wearing these like circular glasses. They're like, she definitely stole those from the Wicked set.
I like challengers.
It's giving One Short Day.
Giving, yeah, what are those glasses called? The, like, whatever.
For I don't Wizomania. Know. The, like, yeah, Wizomania. Yeah, for Wizomania. They definitely haven't started any post-production on Wicked, so we actually don't know when we'll be seeing that movie. Although the crew isn't on strike. Allegedly, yeah. Another news as of today, allegedly Wicked is done filming. Yeah, allegedly Ariana Grande is going back to the U.S. tomorrow.
All they have to do, I think, is what we've heard is shoot some background artist stuff.
Although they haven't even, I'm sure, started looking at this footage, and I imagine there's reshoots that need to happen.
Probably
so.
ADR.
Yeah.
That, which they can't do at this time.
No.
And so then also when you're editing. So the thing is, to do reshoots, right, you have to have who's going to write those reshoots. Who's writing the extra scenes that they think they're missing. Who can decide what scenes are missing? A writer. And you can't do that. Right now.
You know
so
what?
It's a hot mess.
John Chu just released the rough cut. I know it's probably good. Like 8 hours, but like I'll watch it.
We good. Give it to us.
Yeah. Just released the rough cut. But kind of interesting because I feel like the last time there was like an actor strike, like a lot of people came back to the theater. So maybe we'll be seeing some more celebs in theaters. So I don't know. It's kind of like a weird time right now. But we'll see what happens. So yeah. That is our episode. That's our obsession of the week. That's our thoughts on Hadestown. And our next episode is on Stratford's production of Rent, which we gave you a little tease, and that's all we're going to give you. But yeah, I don't even know. There's no way to prep for this episode unless you actually go out to Stratford and see Rent, which I highly recommend you do.
Absolutely.
But maybe not within the next, like, 2 weeks is unrealistic. So, yeah, that's our next episode. We're very excited to talk about the show. And until then, you can listen to any of our other episodes by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Threads at Off to Be Away Podcast with the number 2.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.